This is Dateline Washington on the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Corumbus. Thanks for being with us. We're talking with M. Stanton Evans. The book is Blacklisted by History, the untold story of Senator Joe McCarthy and his fight against America's enemies. Just before the break, we talked about how the Truman administration turned a largely blind eye towards the infiltration of communists into our government, even during the early stages of the Cold War. We talked about the controversial rise to prominence of Senator Joe McCarthy and looked at the evidence of one of the most compelling cases he had against communists infiltrating our government. But clearly one of the most controversial and memorable moments in the entire McCarthy saga was the Army McCarthy hearing. Stan, let's talk about perhaps the most famous encounter that Joe McCarthy had during this effort to expose communism within the government, and that, of course, is the Army McCarthy hearings in 1954. You point out in the book that the most famous exchange, perhaps, in the whole episode between McCarthy and Joseph Welch, yep, the special counsel for the Army, was really been taken out of context and was really more of a smokescreen than someone who really felt victimized by the interrogation.
I would go further. It was a completely phony act on the part of Joe Welch. What happened was, it's kind of complicated. Welch had been baiting Roy Cohn, who was McCarthy's principal aide, in questioning Cohn about information he had about communists in the government. And he went on and on and on at great length, Welch did, about why Cohn did not instantly hand this information over to the Secretary of the Army. And this went on for a long time, and baiting him on that issue. It so happened that Welch had had an assistant named Frederick Fisher, who had been a member of the National Lawyers Guild, and had been sent back to home to Boston, where the law firm was, because of this. So after McCarthy listened enough to this questioning of Cohn about this, he interrupts saying, "Well, Mr. Welch, if you want to know about subversives and you want to know about them right away, I should note that you have this guy, Frederick Fisher, that you brought down here to work in these hearings." Well, at this point, Welch just, he bursts into tears at the end of it. He denounces McCarthy for character assassination, for having exposed this innocent young man as being a member of the National Lawyers Guild, on and on and on. And this is all in the, you'll see video clips of this over and over again of Welch going through this routine. "Have you no decency, sir?" and so on. Well, this is all totally phony. And in fact, as I point out in the chapter, Frederick Fisher, Welch's assistant, had already been outed as a member of the National Lawyers Guild 6 weeks before this by Joseph Welch himself. And I reprint in the book the actual article from the New York Times in the middle of April 54. This hearing is in June, in which Welch says, we're sending Fred Fisher back to Boston because of, he was a member of the National Lawyers Guild. So this is printed in the New York Times, and they say the National Lawyers Guild was a cited communist front by the Attorney General. And they run a great big picture of Frederick Fisher with the article, which Joe McCarthy at least didn't show a picture of Fred Fisher. So the whole thing that Welch was denouncing McCarthy for, he had already done himself 6 weeks before. That's why I say it was a phony act.
Couple minutes left in our conversation with M. Stanton Evans. The book is Blacklisted by History, the untold story of Senator Joe McCarthy and his fight against America's enemies. From that point, given public sentiment and the way that the story was told in the mainstream media following the Army McCarthy hearings, the tide of public opinion turned against Joe McCarthy. But you point out that his censure by the Senate was not as drastic as a lot of people think it is. In fact, they really only ran him up on one count against him, despite the dozens that were originally filed.
That's correct. What happened was, and referring back to our discussion a couple of minutes ago about the Wheeling speech, the investigators who went to Wheeling came back with a report saying McCarthy was right and that he didn't use the 205. Remember that conversation? Those investigators were sent up there by a committee called the Subcommittee on Privileges and Elections. And when the investigators came back with a report that McCarthy was right and that the charges were wrong, that report then disappears. The committee then launched an intensive investigation of McCarthy's personal finances dating back to 1935, which was over a decade before he ever was elected to the Senate. It had nothing to do with the Senate election. They looked into the finances of his father, of his brother, his brother-in-law, and a long list of people delving and running barefoot through his financial records, trying to develop personal information against him. This is the committee, And they did other things, but those are the main ones. This is a committee that he was allegedly in defiance of because he wouldn't cooperate with them. And that was the one count, the failure to cooperate with that committee that was originally presented among 46 counts against him, for which he was censured by the Senate. For defying that committee, he was censured for that.
Last question, Stan, and it's a two-parter. You mentioned that a lot of the research you have done recently is a result of certain documents becoming available that hadn't been available prior to that. How different do you think history would be if some of these documents that you've had access to had been available for the past half century? And secondly, what is the impact, in your opinion, of history apparently getting this wrong for the past half century?
Well, the first thing is that, obviously, if people had known a lot of this background back then, history would, I would think, could have been very different. If we'd known for a fact that John Stewart Service was living with two Soviet agents in Chongqing, that probably would have affected our view of that case, and there was more to that one. Or if we'd known a bunch of other people that were pretending to be conscientious liberals were, in fact, had been communists, like the editor of the New Republic, Michael Strait, who had been recruited into the Communist Party at Cambridge in the 1930s, and it was really sent back here as a Soviet agent, and then became the editor of the New Republic, in which he's denouncing McCarthy. It would have been kind of interesting to know those facts at that time. So that would have been a big difference. I think that the other thing I would say about that, and going in the opposite direction, we still don't know everything we need to know. There's still a lot of stuff that's secret. I'm still trying to get stuff under freedom of information. There are crucial documents in McCarthy cases that are withheld, pulled out of the archives, and I'm trying to get some of those now. But we sure know a lot more than we did, and what it tells us bring it all back around, as McCarthy had the big picture right, and the government was indeed heavily infiltrated with these people. He had the cover-up right, that it was being covered up, it was being denied. He said that over and over again. And if you look at the specific cases I try to do in my book, you see over and over again those same cases popping up in the FBI records and in the records of the State Department, and which is essentially where McCarthy got them.
And Stan, we've touched on some of the biggest moments of the McCarthy era, but certainly there's a lot more detail in a very well-researched and very well-written book that our listeners can certainly pick up. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Greg. It's always a pleasure.
M. Stanton Evans, the book is Blacklisted by History, the Untold Story of Senator Joe McCarthy and His Fight Against America's Enemies. This is Dateline Washington.